who support this NPR station.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up, low-paid college professors. While some full-time professors, administrators, and coaches are doing quite well, adjunct professors at colleges are living on the edge of poverty. We're going to talk about that in a moment. But first, two listener comments about yesterday's program, in which we talked about President Trump's tweet yesterday morning that he wanted to give out a trophy for fake news, that he mentioned CNN. Here's what two listeners had to say.
My name is Joe, a Pasco County resident. Enjoy your show, although I most often disagree with your perspective. Your show just ended, and you were citing PolitiFact as your source for an objective assessment of Fox News. And I just want to let you know I consider PolitiFact to be very politically oriented. They would be anti-Fox and pro the liberal media. And I've seen time and time again where they're very selective on the issues that they elect to report on, and they're usually detrimental to the Republicans or the conservatives, and they do not cover the liberal side the same way. So you cite them as an unbiased organization. I take exception to that. I think they're very biased, and I just wanted to share that with you.
Hi, Rob. Betty from Sarasota. I just want to commend you on your comments vis-a-vis what the radio station stands for when you were speaking with Russell, who was the last caller today on Monday. And I thought you were way too patient and way too kind, and you gave him way too much time given what little he had to offer the station. I so love your program, and the station is truly incredible. It's one of my lifelines in this area. And so I just want to thank you for all the good that you do. And it's very true. I occasionally listen to Fox News, and then after about 2 minutes, I literally have to run to the bathroom just because they do not address any of the evil, as you appropriately stated, anything and everything that Trump has ever done, from the excess Hollywood tapes to everything he's done. They never address. His best friend, Sean Hannity, does nothing but extol the virtues of this absolutely terrible criminal we have in the White House. So, again, thank you, and I look forward to hearing more. And you also played a tape of someone who made some suggestions last Wednesday about blogging the schedule in advance and having people leave comments the same day or the day in advance as well. That was an excellent suggestion. Thank you for your extraordinary work.
Well, there you have two listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. A few weeks ago, the Tampa Bay Times carried a story about an adjunct professor, college professor at the University of South Florida, who was so devoted to teaching and was paid so little that it impacted his health. It caught my eye because of the depth of the reporting and the humanity of the person it profiled. The reporter was Claire McNeil, and McNeil opens her story with this lead. Robert Ryan cleaned out his office in May. He knew he was dying. And the writer on that report is joining us right now. Claire McNeil, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Tell us a little bit more about who Robert Ryan, the adjunct faculty member at USF in Tampa, was.
Robert Ryan was, as you mentioned, extremely devoted to USF. He had been teaching there for about 20 years. As an adjunct professor, he taught composition and literature, and adjuncts like himself make very little money. And some of this, he was a really reclusive man. He lived in a very small efficiency apartment. He surrounded himself with his books and student papers. In many ways, he lived a life that was almost 100% about his work and his chosen profession. And up until the very end, he kept teaching, even as his body began to fail him.
What was he like growing up? What do you know about his early years?
Well, I spoke with his best friend, who said that Robert was pretty much the same throughout his life. He was a pretty stubborn guy who suffered no fools. He was absolutely brilliant, charming, very witty, had a sharp temper, and they first met as students at USF back in the early 70s. And even then, Robert was the kind of guy who could take a class on differential equations just because it interested him and get straight A's, but he always came back to English as his love, his main love in life.
His teaching English was his love. He died this past June at the age of 62. How many years had he been an adjunct faculty member at USF?
About 20 years. He taught there about 20 years on what many people would consider a full-time schedule, 4 courses per semester. But of course, as an adjunct, you're a part-timer, kind of patching together these classes. So in the end, he took home very little money over those 20 years.
For folks who haven't been on a campus recently, what does it mean to teach a 4 courses a semester? How big of a workload is that?
Well, 4 courses is a pretty large workload. In fact, it's what many full-time professors and tenured professors teach, although those professors may also be juggling research on the side. But at the end of the day, this amounts to a full-time job for these professors, and many of them are also trying to, as adjuncts, teach at several university campuses, and so you add in the travel time and grading papers at home, and very quickly it adds up to a very full workload.
We're talking with Claire McNeil, who's a staff writer at the Tampa Bay Times. We're talking about her recent story about Robert Ryan, who at the age of 62 passed away. He was a longtime adjunct faculty member at USF in Tampa, taught English, and maybe some of our listeners took his course too. So in terms of pay and in terms of benefits, after 20 years, what was Robert getting?
Well, I should back up and say that there are several different kinds of adjuncts. These professors, many of them teach a class or two on the side. They'll have a full-time job, or maybe they're a retired professor who misses the classroom. But professors like Robert, who are so devoted and see this as their life's calling, will try to create a full-time career out of patching together these courses, knowing that the academic job market is so dismal. So he was making about $3,000 per course, which added up to about $24,000 per year, teaching 8 classes over the course of the year, which, you know, as you know, is not a lot for, or maybe not what people would expect a college professor to make, since it's always been regarded as a comfortable path or a solidly middle-class job.
Was he teaching the introductory courses, the courses that many freshmen or beginning students have to take at a university?
That's right. I think many parents and students don't really understand or know how many adjuncts they actually are learning from day in and day out. Adjuncts make up a huge portion of the student-facing faculty of American universities these days.
So he's making about $24,000 a year. Did he have any sort of benefits as an adjunct faculty member at USF?
No, adjuncts have no benefits, no job security. You could consider them a sort of a free floater. They come in on a flexible basis. They can patch in at the last minute to teach a class. They sign a contract that gives them a couple $1,000s per class. But other than that, they are they're very vulnerable to if a college decides to shut down a course or decides to cancel their course altogether, and now they have no retirement benefits and are in some ways cast out after a lifetime of working in academia.
You know, we see the money spent on coaches, and we see the money spent on college presidents, and it's hard to believe that somebody who was important to the university was paid just $24,000 a year. How important are adjunct faculty members at a big university like USF?
Adjuncts are hugely important. They offer a critical kind of flexibility to the university, and to be frank, they are a way for universities to cut costs. So over the years, as state funding has dwindled to universities, as administrative costs have skyrocketed, the cost of an adjunct has stayed very low, and they are of course, attractive to universities in that way. They also have some benefits in terms of teaching students, in that they can often come from industries such as the business world. In fact, we have a few adjuncts here at the Tampa Bay Times who will go teach a journalism course at the University of Florida, HCC. So they can offer that kind of outside perspective as well, but the reality is that many of these adjuncts are not working in the industries or working in other industries now. They are simply teaching full-time but getting part-time pay.
I went on Rate Your Professor and I looked at Robert Ryan, and the ratings are still up. The way I read the Rate Your Professor rankings of Robert Ryan were that he was tough. He didn't give kids a pass.
He did not. He was very tough. And his best friend spoke to that a little bit and said, you know, I think students didn't even recognize how much time he spent trying to make them better. And in a lot of cases, these were freshman and sophomore composition students coming in who maybe college was a shock to their system at first, and maybe Robert Ryan was one of the first professors some of these students ever had, and he held them to a very high standard, I think partly out of his deep and profound love for the work he did, and also because he was a sharp guy. He wanted to hold people up to the standard that he saw was fit. So I saw those ratings as well. I think some students were a little bit taken aback at just how hard he pushed them.
Yeah, he was very demanding. So it wasn't an easy course. It wasn't just a course that you could take and breeze through. Robert died at the age of 62. He didn't have health insurance. How did he die?
Well, he was a stubborn guy. He started feeling pain in his shoulder, and he brushed it off. And at this point, he didn't have employer-sponsored health insurance, as most adjuncts do not. And over time, the pain started getting a little bit worse, and eventually he went in to get a checkup and found that he had stage 4 renal cell cancer. At this point, he entered some treatment. He went through a trial, a drug trial, and was the only survivor of that drug trial. He kept teaching. His left arm failed him, and he kept driving to the campus with one arm. He developed tumors all over his face, his mouth. He could barely speak at some points. His friends, and I talked to several in the department, said that it was grotesque having to watch him suffer so greatly and yet still drag himself to campus. I don't think he wanted to give up his identity as a professor. I think that would have been too painful for him. But at the same time, he didn't have health insurance through his employer, and he was fairly destitute. He was sleeping on a pile of coats in his apartment when his mattress sprung a leak. He pushed himself to the very limit of his health, and he finally died in June at age 62.
Mm. You describe him as a military kid, that he was accustomed to persevering, accustomed to duty, in your words.
Yes, he felt a very profound sense of duty, and it came through in his utter devotion to students in grading those papers, to showing up at campus every single day on his days off. He tried to play a devoted role in the faculty. He almost everybody I talked to mentioned these newsletters that he would write. When a faculty member would depart, he'd write these hilarious little newsletters that went out and were really touching to people. But at the same time, he could be very, I don't think cold is the right word, but a little stern, disciplined. He felt, as I said, I think at the end of the day, that his devotion to his job and his chosen profession and his subject of English literature was paramount to him.
Did he have kids or a significant other or a partner?
He did not. He lived alone for the majority of his life. And again, I talked to his best friend about this, and he said, I just don't think that Robert was a difficult man. He was a difficult man, and that it wouldn't have worked long term with somebody. And But some of that was self-imposed too. He was the kind of guy who never finished his doctoral studies because he didn't think he was good enough. He wanted to keep trying harder and harder and harder, and he kept writing and working and writing and working, and never quite got to the point that he felt it was good enough. So he really drove himself into the ground.
So he could never apply to be a full-time professor.
That's right. And I do wonder if he saw that there are not, it is not easy to get a job out there. To get a job as a full-time professor, you have to, since he was a USF graduate, USF likely wouldn't have hired him on as a full-time professor. That's because of a typical and common university, not rules so much as, what's the word, a practice that universities don't hire their own graduates. So he would have had to move. He would have had to bounce between visiting professorships, trying to land a tenure-track job, and it could have taken many years. And again, I don't think he thought he was worthy of it. So he stayed at USF and really made this the place that he would serve out his career in academia.
We're talking with Claire McNeil, who's a staff writer at the Tampa Bay Times, and she profiled an adjunct professor who just passed away in June. Robert Ryan was teaching English at USF for 20 years and passed away in June. We're hearing what his life was like. I found the portrayal of Ryan very touching as I read it, Claire. Claire, one last question.
Sure.
How many, in terms of your reporting, how common is it for adjunct faculty members to work long hours at low pay and not get any sort of benefits, and then end up, in Robert's case, you know, being so far along with his cancer that he couldn't be treated successfully?
Mm-hmm.
How common is it for people to be adjunct faculty members and be close to this?
It's becoming more and more common, I think. Several decades ago, being an adjunct was simply a way to bring expertise to round out the faculty. And as universities have come to rely more and more on adjuncts, and more adjuncts feel trapped in this in-between space where they can't find a full-time job because they are so destitute, they can't afford to move across the country. You see this pool of career adjuncts growing and growing, and it's hard to see how this will come to an end. And I think that's why Robert Ryan has become a touchstone for USF adjuncts who are pushing to unionize. I think they see him in many ways as a martyr, as somebody who devoted himself to university, spent almost all of his time in the classroom with students, thinking about students, grading their papers, and at the end of the day had no insurance, had no money to leave behind, and he represents, in a probably a more extreme way, but he represents what many of these adjuncts have told me that their lives have become, sleeping in their cars, going to conferences and having to camp instead of getting a hotel, using food stamps. These are the common stories of adjunct life that I hear over and over in reporting. Of course, universities say that that's not the case for all adjuncts, that there are plenty who are simply retired professors, or let's say somebody works at a bank and wants to come teach an accounting class. But the reality is that adjuncts like Robert Ryan are growing, and they're very vocal, and they see a union or some kind of collective action as one of the only ways to assert their voices right now as higher ed continues to shift.
You did quote a Guardian newspaper article in which one adjunct had told the Guardian that she had turned to prostitution in order to survive.
That's right. That was an extreme story, but at the same time, I hear people turning to all kinds of things, working several jobs, skipping medical treatments. There was a report that recently just came out this past week of adjunct and contingent faculty in Florida that underscored these statistics once again. It found that a quarter of adjuncts who responded to the survey had food insecurity, were going hungry. So this is this has become a common story, not just at USF, but at universities across the nation.
Well, Claire McNeil, thanks a lot. We are going to talk about that study in just a moment with our next guest, but Claire McNeil of the Tampa Bay Times, thank you so much. And we'll post a link to the story on our website, but it's on the Times website right now. It profiles Robert Ryan, a recently deceased adjunct faculty member at USF in Tampa. Claire, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right. Great to have you here. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. We're joined now by Rebecca Skelton and Calvin Falwell. Both are adjunct faculty members at USF in Tampa. And Rebecca Skelton and Calvin Falwell, welcome to WMNF. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
So let me ask you both, what do you teach? Rebecca, let's start with you.
I was teaching at St. Pete campus. I'm retired now. But I taught for 5 years at USF in St. Pete, and actually before then in a separate class.
Mm-hmm. And Calvin, how about you?
I've been teaching at USF Tampa since 2010 in the School of Music.
Now, did either of you know Robert Ryan?
I did not.
No.
Yeah. But the story that we heard of Robert Ryan's life, low pay, four courses, a kind of a full course load, no benefits. Is that pretty typical for adjunct faculty members teaching at USF?
Yeah.
Absolutely, yes.
Tell us more about that. I mean, how many adjunct faculty members do you estimate there are at USF, either both USF Tampa and St. Pete or USF Tampa alone?
I really don't know.
Not quite sure on the exact number. I mean, hundreds.
Lots.
I mean, hundreds. Yeah.
Right.
I know in my own department, the bulk of the faculty are adjunct, and a fair amount of the instruction is delivered by adjunct faculty. And specifically within the School of Music, a music major takes private lessons on their given instrument, and the majority of those instructors are adjunct instructors.
Hmm. What's your instrument?
Clarinet.
Okay. So I'm sure a lot of parents are listening to this right now saying, well, with the high cost of college, especially if you're an out-of-state parent or out-of-state family coming into college, it costs a lot to go to a public university here in Florida. Why is Florida so dependent on adjuncts?
Well, it's like any business. They don't want to pay any more than they have to, but it's really the corporatization. It's not valuing the education as much as the, you know, bringing money in. I think it used to be much more about education, and professors were revered, but more and more they have to get more students in to pay the costs, and they can't do that by paying full-time professors. So it's a catch-22, but on the other hand, we shouldn't have to suffer for it. We're bringing in, we're highly profitable to them. They could at least recognize that by paying us what we're worth.
How much training do both of you have? How much of...
I have an MFA, which is the terminal degree in fine art.
Mm-hmm. And Calvin?
I have a bachelor's and master's in music, and then a performance diploma.
Mm-hmm. What would happen to the university, do you think, if it no longer had adjunct faculty members?
Well, they wouldn't be able to teach nearly as many classes.
The School of Music would cease to function and would... run the risk of losing accreditation, because you would lose various professors that are teaching instruments that are in demand and that we absolutely need. So I know one of the things that you mentioned is the value of the adjunct, and how much money we bring in to the university in terms of student credit hours. That's one thing that has been stressed in every faculty meeting in the School of Music, is got to keep the SCH up, because it basically justifies your department. And in my own situation, when I was brought in 2010 and up until very recently, I was teaching a full-time load, even though the School of Music would dilute the FTE, that's the full-time equivalency, and they would dilute it down to 4.9, so just under half-time, even though I was teaching a full-time load. And when they altered my load greatly, they made sure to keep me on as adjunct teaching the online course, because this one online course in particular, because it brings in a high amount of money and student credit hours to the School of Music.
Calvin, do you have plans? Would you like to become a full-time tenured professor?
Yes. I mean, I have been applying for the past few years. I've been to the finals for a number of large universities across the country. And as of recently, I just left a 3-year appointment at the College of New Jersey, as an artist in residence on clarinet. Now, I am interested, and I would love to have a full-time position within the School of Music. The other complicating thing for me and many of the adjuncts in the School of Music is we either play in the Florida Orchestra or we play in the Sarasota Orchestra. I myself play in the Sarasota Orchestra. Mm-hmm. So that adds another level of like complication to the schedule. But yeah. Full-time gig from USF would be great. I hear like the benefits that are wonderful.
I want to talk about a report the Service Employees International Union did, Life on the Edge of the Blackboard, which just came out. But before we do that, is it common for... We have so many colleges here in this area. We've got several campuses of USF. We've got Eckerd College. We've got New College. We've got Florida Southern. And I'm leaving out a bunch of other colleges, St. Pete College and a bunch
University
of other...
University of Tampa.
University of Tampa, of course. I should have mentioned that first. Is it common for adjunct faculty members to try to piece together gigs at two or three or four colleges or
absolutely.
Universities?
Absolutely. That is how I spend most of my time, was driving from school to school. Many times during the years I was teaching, I was an adjunct for 20 years. Driving from Eckerd to University of Tampa to St. Pete College, just driving and teaching. So I felt like the migrant worker of academia.
We're going to take some phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. You're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. Our guests are two adjunct faculty members, Rebecca Skelton and Calvin Falwell. Rebecca taught for a long time on the St. Pete campus of USF, and as you heard, she had some other gigs too. And Calvin teaches in the music department at USF in Tampa. This report by the Service Employees International Union is pretty interesting. I read part of it. It says that more than 43% of the 773 Florida faculty that were questioned said the vast majority teach at public colleges and universities. They've experienced at least three indicators of hardship, from having their phone or utilities cut off to taking out a payday loan to use to using a food bank. Nearly one in four have experienced at least five of these economic stresses in the last 5 years alone. One guy at Hillsborough Community College that they quote in the study went without power for 6 days this summer, and it wasn't because of the hurricane. It was because Florida Power and Light cut him off because he couldn't pay his bills. And nearly 9 in 10 of those surveyed teach part-time. Nearly half surveyed report earning between $10,000 and $30,000 last year teaching college courses. Less than 7% reported earning more than $60,000. Some pretty amazing statistics in this report, Life on the Edge of the Blackboard. Is that pretty common for your sister and fellow faculty members?
I think so. I came in as the traditional adjunct who was coming in from industry and had my business on the side. So it was not, but it isn't about me. The more people I talked to who were younger people, got right out of school, they were cobbling this together, and this was their career. They were trying to pay off student loans and support families on this. And art classes may be a little different, because generally each class is 3 hours long, and you meet twice a week, so you cannot put as many jobs together. Also, it doesn't lend itself to the online, although I hear that it's possible. So it really becomes very difficult to make an actual living teaching at different schools. Each class ends up being about 10 hours a week, total, even though your class time is 6 hours per class per week. So if you have to put together more than 24 hours a day's worth, plus you travel time and scheduling, because they don't all line up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I know many people who are in the same situation, and especially for friends of mine that are right out of school, you know, and they feel like, okay, teaching adjunct is a good foot in the door, but they quickly find out that it's academic purgatory in a way. I mean, I myself have been very lucky, and coming from, you know, a performer's standpoint, you know, I have been playing, and I have the orchestra in addition to the adjunct gig. But at the same time, I remember right out of graduate school in Philadelphia, and I started teaching at Holy Family University, a small Catholic university, and then Wilmington University down in Wilmington, Delaware. And the pitfalls of being an adjunct became very, very clear. I was paid between $1,500 and $2,000 a course. Granted, this was 15 years ago. But I remember being ecstatic that I had two courses to teach one semester, and then one of the full-time faculty members couldn't fill one of their classes. So I got a call the first day of classes. Oh, by the way, this section has been taken away from you, and it's going to one of the full-timers. And I had, you know,
you were counting on it.
I was counting on it, and especially, you know, living in Philadelphia and trying
not
to figure
cheap
out how I'm going to pay rent. And
yeah.
Luckily, you know, the West Coast of Florida has been good to me, but it's what you're citing is, I mean, it's common.
We're going to take some phone calls. Our phone number 813-239-9663. Are you both part of the union effort? Are you both trying?
Oh, yeah.
To,
yeah.
Oh, yes.
So why are you in support of having a union as adjunct faculty members?
If you can't negotiate individually, which they don't allow, then they don't really leave as much choice. And they've had years to make this
They don't allow it?
No, you can't really go in and, well, I've tried many other schools saying, hey, I've been here, you know, 5 years, I've developed these two new classes, I've brought in, you know, whole new sections of students, I should get a raise. It's like, sorry, this is what adjuncts get paid, period. You know, there's no raises,
that was one of the
no
details.
Promotions, mm-hmm. no nothing.
That was one of the details in the Robert Ryan story, is
right.
that he hadn't had a pay increase in years.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I myself am very pro-union, and that's one of the main reasons is I see the good that the American Federation of Musicians, the Musicians Union, has done with symphony orchestras, not only in the state of Florida, but on a national level. And, you know, when the workers stand united, you know, we're able to get more respect and higher wages. And honestly, you know, that leads to a better economy.
Well, we're talking about low pay and low benefits for adjunct faculty members at USF in Tampa. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. And you are listening to Radioactivity. And let's go to Richard, who's in St. Petersburg. Hey, Richard, what's your question for our guest?
Well, actually, I know some of the faculty over there at the USF School of Music, and what a lot of people don't realize about musicians, also the hours of rehearsal they put in individually every single day to keep their chops up so they can be an effective teacher and mentor and performer. But what I wanted to, I'm curious if the writer who, the woman you had on earlier, if she could address a comparison of what the adjuncts make versus, say, the facility maintenance people, the supervisors, security, so on and so forth, the various jobs that are performed at USF. I know several people that work as stagehands there, and they make more than the professors do, which I think is kind of confusing. And I'd also like to see how much is in the endowment for USF, how much interest it generates per year, and just a kind of across-the-board comparison to other industries as to how they treat their employees versus the bottom line.
Okay, well, Claire McNeil's not here, the writer from the Tampa Bay Times.
Correct, yeah.
So let's see if our guests know. You know, because there is a union, I know that for a long time AFSCME was at USF in Tampa. I don't know if it's changed to the SEIU or not, but if you were working in the maintenance staff, you could be a member of AFSCME.
I believe so. Mm-hmm. I believe that everybody's a union except adjuncts, including graduate students.
Yeah. So any idea of the differential in pay?
I was told they make more, and I'm thinking, well, go janitors, yay.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, the janitorial staff and the maintenance crews, I mean, they, you know, absolutely, they should be getting what they deserve.
But so should we.
But, I mean, so should we. We are providing a crucial part of the learning process at the university.
Richard mentioned rehearsal also. I've talked to many faculty members in the history department and English department. One of the biggest things they have to do is look at papers and grade papers. It takes hours and hours if they're handing out a test or demanding a paper.
Oh, especially, so the online classes I teach each have... I mean, it varies per section, but generally I have a cap of 150 to 250 students, and all of them have papers that I have to read. And luckily, I do have a couple of graduate assistants from the School of Music that are able to give me five hours each. But when you couple the online courses I'm teaching at the main campus and then teaching at Sarasota Manatee and elsewhere, it's a whole lot of papers to read.
And Richard's other question was about the endowment. I mean, is the endowment big and could it be used to help?
He had some great questions. Maybe somebody could do some research and find out.
Richard, we're going to have to do another show because we don't have all the answers.
Well, thank you for asking.
And I just wanted to make one other point, though, is... everybody on that campus is a valuable employee and an asset. The majority of the time, you always have those little clowns in there. But I just find it disparaging that not just at the university level, but the public school level, that the teachers and mentors are treated so poorly and unfairly. We need to look at this, which I think society is now finally coming to realization of that. But thank you. It's been interesting listening to the writer and to the instructors here.
Richard, thanks a lot. Thank you. 813-239-9663 is the number to call if you want to get a question in on the show. Let's go to Jim, who's in Tampa. Hi, Jim. What's your question? Jim? All right. Jim, we'll put you on hold. We'll try to get you back. Let's go to Deani, who runs an entertainment company. Deani, is that you? Deani? All right, we're looking.
Hello? Looks,
yeah,
hello?
Deani, you're on. Did I pronounce your name right?
Yes, you did.
Okay, what's your question?
Hi, I am from Son of a Gun Entertainment, and I just wanted to know if we can get our artist, Leigh McQueen, into rotation on your radio station.
Okay, you're going to have to call the main number, which is 813-238-8001, and ask for our music director, Deani. Thanks a lot for calling, and let's go to back to Jim in Tampa. Jim, are you there? All right, Jim must have dropped off. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Charlie the Plumber, who's in Odessa. Charlie, thanks for calling in. What's your question?
Hey, guys. I got a couple of questions. You know what? If you cannot make money in a certain field, I would suggest start a business. Hey, we got a shortage of plumbers. I just got back off of a plumbing job. I was there for an hour, made $175. Hey, I do this all day long, guys. And, you know, if you're not making money in the field you're in, I mean, let's face it, there's way too many colleges. There's way too many professors. Don't count on a union. Go out there and do something yourself. Get motivated. Don't count on somebody else giving you a living. Don't count on somebody being nice to you. Because those places like that, they're going to treat you like, you know, whatever, you're just, you know, here another number. Hey, guys, take some advice from Charlie the Plumber. Start your own business. I mean, that's the American dream. This is a right-to-work state. This is not a union state. So this means you got a right, you know, to get off your behind and go get a job and go to work. I mean, you guys, if you're not happy, if you're not making money with the job you're doing, by God, start a business.
All right, you know, Charlie, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for your question.
Actually, I do run my own business. I'm an artist. I'm a professional artist, and I make not quite a living, but, you know, I do okay. And it's true. Yes, possibly, actually, go be a plumber. My gosh, they make plenty of money. If you know, that's an excellent job choice. If you have the means to go study. However, when you get out of college, you generally have so much debt, you not need to do something. You can't go study something else. And maybe college education is overemphasized. Trade school's great, you know, be an electrician, be a plumber, fine. But that's not everybody's ability or calling. So it's not realistic to tell somebody that. It sounds nice. It makes you feel good to say that, but it doesn't really help. We do this because we love teaching, we love our colleagues, we love our students, we love our subjects. We have something to offer, and we are professionals.
Calvin, what would you say?
Yeah, and actually, the nature of being a musician and a performing artist is that of you are an entrepreneur. Every musician that I know is basically an entrepreneur.
Small business person.
Absolutely. Right. And the reason why I mentioned earlier that the West Coast of Florida has been good to me is because I'm able to play in a symphony orchestra and make it a good living in that. And then I'm able to take freelance work outside of that with other orchestras in the area. I am able to teach privately in my home. And teaching at USF was a component of my income. But to say that we are not doing anything, I think that's very short-sighted. And the reason why I say that is every musician and performing artist and that I know personally and professionally, and for that matter, adjuncts in other subject matters who are published authors, who are taking time to work on their craft, who have articles published in very well-respected journals, they are, to put it one way, spinning many plates at the same time to be able to make a decent living. And we're not just sitting on our butts and hoping that Judy Ginshaft is going to give us a handout for the holidays.
Same for artists.
Tony writes this email. He says, great program. I, for many years, was the vice president of academic affairs for a mid-sized private business-oriented university in the highly expensive San Francisco Bay Area. Many adjuncts in the liberal arts area we called freeway flyers, who taught our basic English and math courses, and they had doctorates. They had to piece together sometimes 8 courses a term to make enough to live on, while full-time faculty taught just 2 or 3. We paid adjunct faculty pitifully low wages, and they were sometimes treated by full-time faculty as second-class citizens. That's Tony's email from cyberspace. Mm-hmm. Not sure what city Tony's in. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. And then Michael writes this. He says, a friend who is an adjunct at USF was surprised to learn that the state of Florida had not been paying into her Social Security account because she was deemed an independent contractor. This affected the amount of her Social Security check after she turned 65. It seems to me that this should be the subject of a huge lawsuit. According to the U.S. Labor Department guidelines, adjuncts are employees. That's Mike in St. Pete. This is an issue for a lot of people, in academia and outside. Independent contractors, what do you say?
Well, they don't really give us the independence that independent contractors were. We would be able to negotiate, much more freely.
And
if
you're
we were
supposed
that, but
to
we're
set.
Not.
You're supposed to set your own hours.
Right. We don't really qualify as that because that's just.
They don't take out Social Security.
They don't take out Social Security. They take out a little bit for some a pension that never really adds up to much because we're all teaching so many places and for so little money. It all comes out of our pay, so it really is a pathetically small amount.
So if you're not getting money taken out for Social Security, a typical employer would match about half of your Social Security payment, 6 or 7%. So when we say that adjuncts are paid $24,000 a year,
there is a
it's less.
I know in my contract there is the temporary employee retirement plan,
right.
Which is what all adjuncts are enrolled in, and you don't have any choice.
Right.
And there's a small employer contribution, but then they take the majority of the money that goes into that account out of your paycheck.
And no Social Security.
No Social Security.
You're going to be in so much trouble.
So your Social Security check when you retire is going to be small.
Mm-hmm. If any.
Let me ask you, what's next? Is there a meeting on campus? Is there a union drive? Tell us what the next step is.
There's a rally
in terms of
press conference tomorrow at USF at the Marshall Center by the Bull statue. And we really would like to have our union election. We'd like to be able to vote for the union.
And that's the biggest thing that we're asking right now. I mean, we just want to vote. We want our voice to be heard.
Exactly.
And begs the question, what is the administration really scared of whenever they've retained a law firm that they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to fight us?
Oh my God, they could spend that on us and, you know, come everybody wins.
I mean, why not use the money that they're putting into fighting this into investing in their faculty? I know that the big word around campus has been preeminence, and oh, we're going to devote so many resources to getting to that preeminent level. Well, if you want real preeminence, you should invest in your faculty, because
we're the people that produce their product.
Exactly. Know? And here's the thing. As adjuncts, I mean, we're not greedy. We're not asking for huge amounts of money. All we are asking for is respect, be paid what we're worth, and, you know, have an idea of what we're able to expect in the coming years.
We're talking with two adjunct faculty members who've taught at USF, both USF in Tampa and USF in St. Pete. Rebecca Skelton is here and Calvin Falwell, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Let's go to Maria Jose, who is in St. Petersburg. Maria Jose, welcome to WMNF. What would you like to ask?
It's not so much as asking, but more so in a response to the previous caller who was a plumber. He needs to thank the plumbers and pipefitter unions for the fact that he makes good wages, because it is unions that drive wages up. It helps working class families. It helps faculty. It helps teachers. The fact of the matter is that unions allow for wages to go up. It gives people the ability to negotiate their wages. The fact that we have maternity leave, the fact that we have 40-hour work week, the fact that we have overtime, we have sick leave, those things. Thank you, unions. Unions are the reasons that drive our economy. It helps working class families. And unfortunately, we're seeing, the decimation of unions everywhere, anti-unionism from the Republicans. Even in Florida legislature right now, they're trying to decertify unions by forcing a law that says that unions need to be 50% membership in order for them to exist. And we know that in Florida, the teachers' unions, the paraprofessionals, and many unions would be decertified if that's the case. So again, in response to that caller, the reason why he makes good wages is because of the pipe fitters and you know, the unions in his trade skill that have helped drive wages up for the skill set that he has. Why not for faculty? Why not for adjunct faculty? They deserve to have living wages. Thank you.
Okay, Maria Jose, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in. Let's go to Aaron, who's in Tampa. Hi, Aaron. You're on. What's your question?
Hi. My name is Aaron. I'm the co-president of Graduate Assistance United. I was actually on the radio last week talking about our union and some other things. So at USF, the graduate assistants have a union, the faculty have a union, the full-time faculty, and the staff have a union with AFSCME. Staff being tradespeople that work for the university, they have a union. So the only group one of the only groups of labor at the university that's left out of unionization is adjuncts. And, I mean, even us graduate students who don't have graduate degrees yet, or not all of us have graduate degrees yet, we're teaching courses and we're making more money and we have better benefits than the adjuncts that already have their degrees and are teaching the same kind of courses that we're teaching. And it's just unfair. And it's because we have a union, and our union's been established for a long time, and we've been able to negotiate with the university, and the adjuncts haven't. And that's the situation.
Aaron, thanks a lot. We're getting to some... Getting some distortion on your phone, but Aaron, thanks a lot. Why do the graduate students have a union and the adjunct faculty members don't?
I don't know. I'm happy for them. I'm glad they do. I've heard some of them say that they became adjuncts after grad school there and were disappointed that suddenly they got a loss in pay and no health insurance. So mm-hmm. It was what? Wait. So
tomorrow's rally is at what time?
It's at 10:30
in front of the Bull on the USF Tampa campus?
Yes.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. You're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. Let's go to Lenny, who's in Englewood. Hi, Lenny. What's your question or comment?
Yes, excellent show. a question for the plumber who called. He should be really concerned if the school systems are paying so poorly to the teaching, then how come tuition is so high? And where's that money going? Who's getting the money?
Well, that's a great question. Any ideas?
Not us.
Yeah, certainly not going to the adjunct faculty members.
Yeah, I believe it was Rolling Stone did an article a few years ago. They were talking about football and how the athletic departments are sucking up a lot of the money that goes into salaries, such as for coaches, to pay for scholarships and to pay for building and facilities. So a lot of the money that we pay for, you know, that goes to tuition, doesn't end up paying for salaries for teaching.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't I think the university would say by having a sports program, we attract a lot of people that might not otherwise be interested in college, and we can use that revenue that we get from the games on TV and radio to generate more money for the university. Yeah. But I don't know if that's actually how the money, whether or not the sports program subsidizes the university or the university subsidizes the sports program. I wish I was better informed on that.
One thing that has happened is there's been a huge proliferation in administration. So maybe they need more people, I don't know, but that's where a lot of the salaries have gone in the growth in the administration part of the college.
All right, Lenny, thanks a lot. Thanks for the call.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right, great to hear from you. Let's go to Tracy in St. Petersburg. Hi, Tracy, you're on. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thank you for the show. I'm just calling to defend your two guests against Charlie the Plumber. That's great for Charlie that he makes good wages, but to insinuate that these people are sitting around on their desk really irritated me. It takes a really long time, a lot of energy, a lot of money, hours and hours of research to get to where these people, hours and hours of classwork to get to where these people have earned their degrees. And in the case of the musician, hours and hours and hours, countless hours in his life to learn his instruments. So these people have hardly been sitting on their desk. Good for him that his calling is in an area where you make lots of money. So if your calling is to be a musician or a teacher, that's your calling. And for the university system, with as much money as they make and as much money as they pay their administrators and as much money as they put into their new sports team, which PA was not supposed to happen at USF, in the charter of USF, it wasn't supposed to be a sports team there ever. I'm just calling to defend these people because they work very hard and they deserve to be paid a living wage for what they contribute to the university. The university wouldn't be able to function without adjunct professors. And they absolutely are a very vital part, and they deserve to be paid more. And for people like Charlie to insinuate that they're not working and they're sitting on their desk really made me a little bit angry.
All right. Tracy, thanks a lot. Thanks. Yeah. Glad we could release some of that anger. And
I appreciate the support. I really do. Yeah. It's interesting. As someone who works in the School of Music, a lot of my teaching load for the last few years was individual study, and that's I would have anywhere between 15 to 18 applied clarinet students in any given semester, and that means 15 to 18 contact hours with these students, and the vast majority of them were music education majors and who immediately, as soon as they graduated, went into the public school system teaching. And I feel like the public school teachers are in a similar fight, having to justify what they do. And I feel like that for people who spend so much time working with others, teaching them, and whether it be in the arts, music, political science, chemistry, these people have a calling. And if it weren't for teachers, none of us would be here.
Well, Calvin Falwell and Rebecca Skelton, thank you so much for coming by. The rally of adjunct faculty members is tomorrow at 10:30 on the USF Tampa campus. 10:30 to 11?
Yeah. Starts at 11.
Okay, Kelly Benjamin's in the background. He's with the SEIU. Starts at 11 at the Bull on the USF Tampa campus. Thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. I'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. And today is Giving Tuesday. Please put WMNF on the top of your list of nonprofits to support. You can give online at WMNF.org or donate by calling us at 813-238-8001. There's a lot of other great charities out there, too. So if you don't donate to WMNF, we hope you donate to at least one charity today. This is Giving Tuesday. Thanks a lot for listening. And Alvaro Montalegre was our phone producer today. This is WMNF Tampa St. Peter's.